Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger's communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click the Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, and support services. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio. My name is Karen Krecha, and I'm the Executive Director of Autism Empowerment and happy to be your host for today's show. Autism Empowerment is a passionate and positive grassroots 501c3 nonprofit founded in Vancouver, Washington in June 2011. We're dedicated to offering programs, services, resources, and special events that enrich and empower the lives of youth, adults, families, and those connected with the autism and Asperger communities throughout the world. We invite you to become more connected after the show. You can visit us at our website at www.autismempowerment.org and get to know more about us and what we offer. You can also connect with us there through social media. Today's show recording date is Monday, March 17th, 2014. Happy St. Patrick's Day to those of you out there who celebrate that. And our special guest for today is Dr. Michael Brook, a licensed psychologist based in the Portland, Oregon and Vancouver, Washington area. He's the inventor of Chime In, the conversation game, and we'll be talking with Michael today about how to improve social skills and communication for youth and adults on the autism spectrum and with other communication challenges. Before I bring Dr. Brook on air, I'd like to give a special thanks to our recent guest, Coach Jim Johnson, who shared with us the story of Jason McElwain, a high school basketball team manager on the autism spectrum, who stunned the world when he entered a basketball game in the dying minutes and proceeded to shoot the lights out, scoring 20 points in just over 4 minutes. You may have seen the YouTube video a while back, and it was fascinating to talk with Coach Johnson because that day actually ended up changing not only the trajectory of Jason's life, but also the coaches as well. And in addition to basketball coaching, he's written a book and now does motivational speaking with JMAC and does a lot of cool things around the country. So be sure to check that show out in archives. All of our shows can be listened to on demand at any time through Blog Talk Radio or through iTunes. And for those of you listening in from the Southwest Washington and Portland metro area, I wanted to let you know of a couple exciting things coming up soon. On Friday, March 21st, we'll be having our monthly Dads ASD support group meeting, and that'll be from 7 to 9 at Life Point Church in Vancouver. We're coming up on almost a year there, so that's a wonderful support group for men with children of any ages on the autism spectrum. And then starting in April, Autism Empowerment is also adding a support group meeting for adults on the autism spectrum to connect, and I will be a part of that. That will be on the second Friday of each month from 7 to 9, and we'll be having details about that up on our website at autismempowerment.org shortly. Well, as many of you know, April is Autism Awareness Month, or as we like to call it around here, Autism Acceptance Month. Autism Empowerment will be participating in a wide range of activities in April, including the hosting of our third annual Easter egg hunt for acceptance of all abilities. Autism Empowerment is the host for this event, and we've added two event partners for 2014. The Miracle League of Vancouver, Washington, which was a great partner of ours back in 2013, and Innovative Services Northwest, a well-respected local nonprofit that offers a variety of services for those in the disabilities community. This acceptance event is free to attendees and takes place on Saturday, April 19th from 1 to 4 at McKenzie Stadium in Vancouver, Washington. It's tailored toward youth and adults with autism, Asperger's, developmental disabilities, physical disabilities, or special needs of any kind. And it's framed as an inclusion event, so siblings, friends, and family are also welcome. We're also going to have a cross-disability resource fair with agencies and a wide range of service professionals and support providers exhibiting around the stadium. In fact, Dr. Michael Brook will be on the air with me in just a minute. He's going to be out there exhibiting as well. So if you have any questions for him after our interview, please be sure to stop by his booth and say hi. Other features are a special silent auction, the Portland Aquarium, Oregon Mermaids, Rojo the Therapy Llama, the Vancouver Fire and Police Department, Oregon Ponies, sensory areas, a magician, face painting, the Easter Bunny, and all sorts of fun games and activities. The event is free, but we strongly encourage you to pre-register at the Autism Empowerment website, and we are also still looking for additional volunteers, so if interested, please go ahead and check that out on our website, too. Okay, well, this conversation with you today so far has been rather one-sided. And for those of us like myself on the autism spectrum, engaging in conversation with others can often feel that way. Either we have trouble trying to figure out what to say and when to say it, or when we talk, we do get on a roll, and so oftentimes it's about something that fascinates us, and we may not know when to stop. So perhaps Dr. Michael Brook can help assist us in understanding some of these mysterious, unspoken conversation and social roles a bit better. Dr. Brook is a licensed psychologist in the states of Washington and Oregon and grew up in the Big Sky country of Montana, where he enjoyed rafting, camping, fishing, piano, gymnastics, and Dungeons and Dragons. He graduated magna cum laude from University of Oregon and received his doctorate at Rutgers University. Dr. Brook regularly works with children and adults on the autism spectrum, and he works with children and adults ages 12 to adult and shares a practice in Portland, Oregon and Vancouver, Washington with his wife, Carlena. He is the inventor of Chime In, the conversation game, and also facilitates social skills groups for middle school students, high school students, and adults on the spectrum in the Portland metro area. In fact, I believe his next groups are starting in spring 2014. We'll talk about that a little too. Let's go ahead and hear some of his expertise by bringing him on air now. Dr. Michael Brook, welcome to Autism Empowerment Radio.
Well, hello, and thank you very much for that nice introduction. It's great to be here.
You're very welcome. I appreciate you taking time to come on our show. You're well-respected here in our community. But for our listeners who may not be familiar, I'm hoping you can take a few minutes here to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you said, I'm a psychologist in the area, and I have social skills groups for individuals that are struggling socially. They don't necessarily have to be diagnosed as being on the spectrum, but if they're struggling to connect and make friends and fit in, then my group's one of the possibilities in terms of providing some help to get more successful with that. And it's very much based on things that they can do to make things better, as opposed to pointing out you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, because they get enough of kind of that demoralizing experience when they're in a school setting or in other settings. And so in that way, it's my belief that it's a really empowering group. And then the other thing, kind of an offshoot of working in the group, is developing a conversation game that provides a structure, a very usable structure, so that that skill can be a bit more fun to learn, have a bit more of a game element to it, and hopefully with enough practice that it can be something that's a bit more intuitive to utilize, given that at least at this stage of things, at some level of being able to take part in conversations seems to be necessary in order to be successful, both with getting and making friends, but also in being successful in the workplace.
Well,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Did you want me to continue, or were you going to go on? Sorry.
No. You go ahead, please.
Okay. So this is, for our listeners out there, this is one of the things I struggle with, and especially when you get on the phone and you cannot see the facial expressions of the person in front of you. I wanted to just kind of step back a little bit. I know you're a clinical psychologist, and I was wondering what drew you into this career path? What made you decide you wanted to help work with children and adults?
Well, to be honest, when I was in grade school, I got bullied quite a bit. And so I really got experience firsthand of being on the outside looking in and how painful that can be. And it took a lot of time to figure out kind of what was happening, why this was happening, and for things to get better. And so out of having some bad experiences, and to the degree that I can to minimize the amount that others have those bad experiences, that's certainly one of the things that brought me to a career in helping others. And like most people who pursue a career in psychology, we get training and clinical experiences in a multitude of settings. So I know I want to convey that it was just a straight route to working with individuals on the spectrum. But I did work with individuals on the spectrum off and on. And when I came to the Northwest, I just realized in the particular community I'm in, Portland and Vancouver, that there just isn't enough in the way of services. And the social skills piece was one piece I felt that I could provide that could be useful for individuals that are struggling to connect socially.
Well, and that is so true. I mean, I've heard from so many families in this area how difficult it is. You know, they want to be able to help their kids make more connections, and there just really aren't that many services available. But it's kind of interesting because a couple months back, I was actually attending a parent-teacher connection group at my youngest son's elementary school. And the speech-language pathologist was there, and she had actually brought out a copy of your game, Chime In, the conversation game. And she wanted to share it with parents, and she said that at the time that she was using it with a number of the students there, and they were really enjoying it. And I knew that you were the inventor of the game and thought the connection was pretty cool. And I wanted I know that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. So I was wondering if you could, tell us about the game, what it is, when it came out, and how did it come to be?
Yeah. So I had already started doing social skills groups in the Portland, Vancouver area, but was finding it difficult to keep the motivation amongst the clients, the students that I was working with. And also was finding the groups really, from a personal standpoint, hard to continue, to keep going, and not terribly rewarding. And so I was looking for something that could be usable for the groups I work with, middle schoolers, high schoolers, and adults. The way, in my opinion, people make that connection with others is first and foremost through conversation. That's the entree, that's the lead-in. And so if somebody can be successful at that, really helps one learn more about what the other person's interests are. If you know what their interests are, then you can know whether or not you have similar interests. And then, the sweet spot for all of us is, I believe, is when we realize we have a lot of common interests with somebody, and then it just becomes a lot more effortless to be able to talk. But before you can get to that sweet spot, you have to have some ability to keep the conversation going during the "I don't know you so well" phase, that awkward phase where you have those gaps and those awkward gaps, pauses in conversation. And so then over time I started developing a card game. And what it is there's a lot of elements to it, but there's four core elements. One, there's four core conversation skills, as I define it. The first skill is making statements, and you can make statements as long as what you're saying connects with things that other people are talking about. The second skill is using questions that show interest in others. It's really important to ask other people's questions that aren't just self-interested, but that show, like if you were sharing something about some of the hobbies you have, and I asked you, when was the last time you went bowling? If that was one of the hobbies that you had, then that shows interest in you, and that usually leaves people with good thoughts and feelings if I show some interest in some of the things that they like. And then the third card is using what I would call encouraging gestures and sounds. Even though we're actually talking via phone and we're not in the same room, I would suspect that at different times, Karen, that you are nodding your head. At different times, you might be saying, mm-hmm. And those are things that a person learns over time to do to show that they're paying attention, that they're following along. And it's a really, really invaluable skill. It's great in particular when somebody feels like they don't want to immediately talk, participate in the conversation, or just really engrossed in listening. And that's a way that everyone can see through your nonverbal behaviors that you are attending to things. And then the final and most difficult skill, the trickiest one, is friendly teasing. And in the work I've done in reading the books that I've read and whatnot, I see this rarely. Friendly teasing is a part of everyday conversation. It's a very tricky one because it looks a lot like mean teasing, and mean teasing does not feel good. Mean teasing is bullying. But friendly teasing is, if it's being used, that's the way that many people test the waters to see, are you going to be a fun person to hang around? Are you going to be somebody that we can not be so serious and we can relax and just have fun? And so the game is built around those four skills. And each card is color-coded. So making a statement is in the color red. Asking questions that show interest in others is in the blue color. Purging gestures and sounds is in an orange color, and friendly teasing is in the green color. The reason for that is so that when the participants, they hold a set of the cards in their hand, usually about eight or so, of mixed colors. And that way, when they use the skill, before, for example, I would make a statement, I would actually put the make a statement card, that red card, into the center of the circle. Everyone immediately knows the skill that I'm trying to use. And so they can know what to expect. And so if I start asking a question, they know, wait, that's not right. You're using a red card. And if I make a statement and it connects with things that other people are talking about, then everyone will get it and it'll make sense and the conversation will keep moving. If I make a statement that seems to have no connection to anything people are talking about, we'll have that awkward pause that happens, that awkward silence, and then usually I'll make the timeout sign in the group, and I'll say, okay, is there a way that what you were saying was connected to what Joey was talking about? And, you know, sometimes there is that I don't see, and if other people agree that they saw that same link very easily, then I'll say, okay, that makes sense. But if nobody or very few people get the link, then I'll say, okay, that's way off topic. And so we practice picking up on conversation themes. Maybe it might be helpful for me to go through a sample conversation and so that you can see some elements where people get messed up.
Yeah, that would be great. Sure, please do.
For anyone who's been to my groups, they've heard this conversation before, but the conversation that I usually introduce parents to help them see how this could be useful for their young adults or their child is, imagine that I'm sharing, you know what, I just had this really great pulled pork sandwich at Russell Street Barbecue. And let's say that there's a woman, Susie, there, and she says, you know what, one time I was in New Orleans, and I just had the greatest ribs during Mardi Gras. And then let's say you, Karen, were to share, you know what, I've never been to Mardi Gras, but a place I'd love to go on vacation is Hawaii. I just love the beaches there. And then maybe I share with a statement, you know, when you talk about the beaches of Hawaii, I just think about how glad I am that I live in the Pacific Northwest because we just have such great beaches where there's the high cliffs and the dunes. There's a lot of variety. So that right there, I'm stopping the conversation here, but that right there, that example conversation, everyone made statements. I think you'll notice, Karen, that the conversation really bounced around. But mm-hmm. Everyone did connect with the conversation. And that's one of the things that gets tricky is that people who struggle socially don't realize that in a conversation it will bounce around. Even if everyone in the group was really interested in Pokemon, at some point it would drift from Pokemon. And if you don't follow the drift and you bring it immediately back to Pokemon, people will think in their heads, that's really rude. And if it happens a lot of times, they'll think in their heads, man, that person is really self-centered. All they want to do is talk about what they want to talk about. So back to that conversation, the conversation bounced around. But there were conversation themes that people picked up on. It was not random the way many of my students view it. And so, for example, Karen, what are your associations with New Orleans? What things do you think about when you hear about somebody going to New Orleans?
Well, I do think about Mardi Gras, and I also think about a bowling tournament that I participated there back in the 90s. So.
Yeah,
I think of very festive and beads.
Festive and beads, and then there are some tragedies associated with New Orleans. There's Hurricane Katrina, and there's the Gulf oil spill, and then there's things like jazz and Cajun food and Zydeco music. And then if you're a sports nut, then there's the Saints. And so what people don't realize is that oftentimes there are a number of different conversation things that you could pick up on. And if I were to throw out a red card, and as I throw out that red card after that woman talked about the ribs during Mardi Gras, I could say, oh, I love New Orleans. You know, the Saints have really improved as a team. I could say that, and that would connect. Ultimately, I could say, oh, New Orleans. You know, I don't listen to jazz all that often, but I love I've been to New Orleans once or twice, and seeing jazz live was just amazing. Or, again, somebody could share, you know, it's just a tragedy of how long it took the government to get into New Orleans and help after Hurricane Katrina. All of those, amongst others, are options of potential ways I can choose to take the conversation. But I did the all-important thing of connecting with a current conversation theme.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I'm sitting here wondering, you know, that's all good with casual conversation, but what do you think is the main point with that?
Well, you know, the main point with conversation, and this is a very, there's, it's a very hidden point of conversation, is it's really about, particularly if it's casual or a small talk kind of conversation, it's about building a connection with the other person or people there and leaving them with a good, Michelle Garcia Winter might say, leaving them with good thoughts and feelings about you. So it's not about, which some people think, it's not about getting your point across per se. It's not about, it's certainly not about winning the argument. If you're trying to win an argument in a casual conversation, you have stepped into the wrong domain. And it really is about learning more about the person and building a connection. Which,
so
which
you would
I can
say
imagine
that, like,
feels kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, small talk has always been very hard for me. I get what you're saying in terms of listening very carefully to what the person says, trying to find a connection with that and talking and having the conversation so that you sound polite and respectful and they go away having a good feeling. But for me, it's always been difficult because I like to get into conversations that I feel have levels of substance, and usually small talking and casual conversations, that's not the place for that. And
yes,
it's kind of hard to know.
There's levels of how in-depth the conversation can be. And so for adults, a situation that most adults really dislike somewhat universally, except for a very small majority, is going to a convention, for example, and going to some meet and greet, that is something that most people just hate because they don't know anyone. They feel really isolated, and they have to, from knowing nothing, try and make some kind of connection. And that's really draining, and those kinds of conversations tend to, in particular, be very superficial. And so it takes a lot of effort, and there's, on occasion, you know, you have a really great, you luck into having a great conversation, but most of the time it's a pretty unrewarding experience. Versus if it's somebody that you, on the other extreme, is it's a person that you know very well over a number of years, then when you get together, you probably skip most of like the superficial stuff, except for maybe how you doing, and you get right to, or very quickly to, the things that you have in common that you love to talk about.
That makes sense. And but what you're saying is that you need to be able to build the skills to develop the relations so that you can get to that point.
Yes, you need to, and we need to pick and choose when we use the small talk skills. But the way I view it is it's one thing to choose to not do it, and at different times the person chooses to not do it. For example, recently, there was an auction preschool that my youngest children go to, and when the auction was coming up, I realized that if I went there, because my wife couldn't attend, that I really don't know the other parents all that well, and so I would be put into the quintessential small talk situation. And I checked in with myself, my internal energy meter, and I went, you know what, this sounds to me right now too exhausting. Too emotionally draining, and I made the choice not to do it. I made a choice not to go, but I could have chosen to go, and I could have done the things that would have enabled me to build a positive connection with the parents there. And I really am of the belief that I want to be able to give at least children and adults the option of being able to use the skills when they want to use them, instead of being in the situation that I feel so many are in, where they're spending 6.5 to 8 hours a day at a school where they feel it's very demoralizing because they know that they're not making connections. They know that they're on the outside, but they don't know how to make anything better. And they experience that week after week. It's such a demoralizing experience. I want them to at least have the option to know there is this thing that you can do if you want to, and now if you master it to a relative degree, then the next stage is to make your decision as to which situations you use it, in which situations you maybe bow out or maybe get perceived as a little bit more rude because you're not using the skills.
So for those that are, you know, struggling to fit in and make friends with their peers, which, you know, I think a lot of us on the spectrum, especially when we're in that middle school age, you know, especially we start to notice a lot of differences between ourselves and our peers. Using your game helps build sort of like almost like a script-based of just different types of rules that you can use to be able to engage in conversation. Is that how I'm kind of understanding it?
Kind of. I think one of the beauties of it is that it isn't scripted. So many programs which have good useful tools to it are, you know, if how to start a conversation. First you do this, then you do this, then you do that. But it's what my tool is that there's these four skills: making statements, asking questions, encouraging gestures and silence, friendly teasing, and once you understand these a bit, then it's your choice to pick and choose which one you use in any given situation. So most every conversation, and I've been around for a little over 4 decades, is a little bit different, and sometimes they're a lot different. So there's no way conceivable that you can tell somebody, this is what you say in this situation. But I think people get confused. They see conversations as more noisy, more random, more chaotic than they actually are. And so by having these concrete, these four concrete cards, it takes that noise out. It provides this framework, and they can see, oh, almost always it's these four skills that are being used. They get mixed and matched, but when you come down to it, it's these four skills.
That's, and I would imagine playing the game and practicing that over and over and over again, it would just start to become much more natural. Where
exactly.
It would just... Now, if someone, you know, it sounds like with this game it helps to have a facilitator. How would you suggest if people were interested in getting this game or in using it, what is your suggestion? Would they do it through a local psychologist? Could they order it online and use it with their family? Is it something that should be picked up by the school? How does that all work?
Yeah, so you're right. Just to step back a moment, it does take practice. And what I was finding with teaching other types of skills from other well-respected individuals, I was finding that I could basically do the lesson once, and then the students that I was teaching didn't want to really hear the lesson anymore. They'd say, "I've already heard that," but hearing it once isn't the same as mastering the concept. And so, mm-hmm. by making it a game, I'm able to get students and adults to play it over and over again, so that they can actually master it. Because at the heart of it, although words are being used, conversation is procedural learning. It's procedural learning like learning the piano or learning how to ride a bike. I can describe how to ride a bike all day long. It is nothing like riding a bike. The only thing that really helps you learn how to ride a bike is getting on the bike. And we all fall down a number of times, some of us more than others. And then somehow we figure out the complex mechanics, and then most of us can get off and go relatively swimmingly. And that's the same concept here, is with practice in a way that's more fun and also empowers the student, because they literally hold the cards. So they get to pick and choose when things get used. And I'm not standing there and going, "Good job, Jimmy. Good job, Joy." Because that's very distracting from a conversation. Instead, they get the feeling of this is really working well because other people respond to what they're saying. But then you asked, how do you get it? You can order it from my website, and that's brookpsychologist.com. I'm in the process of creating the unique website just for the game. But right now, that's where you would get it, and there's an order page, and it costs $55. There's a whole another layer of the game we haven't talked about yet, but that's mm-hmm. for the manual and the cards and the dice, and it also includes shipping. And do you need a facilitator? Yes, you do. And by a facilitator, you need somebody that is relatively good already at conversation, because somebody who knows how to keep a conversation going well needs to act in a way like a referee, like a coach. And so that can be a parent, that can be a therapist, that can be an educator in the school system. I think this is a very powerful tool for any of those settings. I think it's a particularly powerful tool in the school setting. And it works best to have the child or the adult have the conversation, but some of the people who are having the conversation with that child or that adult are in a similar age range. It's also often important that you don't do the conversation with a sibling. And the reason I say that is because of friendly teasing. Because this is something I know, having an older brother and a younger sister. And when I've talked about this with parents, invariably they all laugh and they all roll their eyes and all groan, indicating to me nonverbally that they have the same experience. And that is, that siblings have this unique ability to find a way to tease their brother or sister just enough to get their goat to set them off, but not quite enough so that the parent can definitively say that they were engaged in mean teasing. And that just seems to be the sweet spot that siblings, particularly if they're close in age, are good at. And if you tease, and I had this problem in grade school, is if you tease your peers the same way like your brother teases you or you tease your brother, you are going to lose friends or potential friends so quick. It's not even funny. And so I like to tell parents to make that distinction, is that you understand that this is something that begrudgingly happens between siblings, but friendly teasing in particular, it needs to be done literally in a friendly way. If you're doing it so that you get somebody's goat and make them feel bad, you're not. You're really engaged in bullying.
Yeah, that has to be pretty jerky, especially for the younger ones to try to understand, especially with, you know, all of the talk about bullying and trying to decide, you know, even if you don't mean to be mean, how it can be easily perceived that way by someone else. So
right.
It's good that you have a guide in there that kind of explains that to let parents know that this is going to be a particularly sensitive topic.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it probably doesn't get talked about all that much, because it is a sensitive topic. It brings up some very uncomfortable feelings. And I'll give you a very concrete example, Karen. And this is an example I give in my groups. Let's say, to distinguish mean teasing and friendly teasing, because they look so similar. So, Karen, let's pretend that you and I are not really good friends and that I don't really like you. Now, in this hypothetical situation, let's say that you do something really smart. What I might say back is, you know what, Karen, you're such a dork. And my whole point of doing that is to make you feel bad, okay? Now, let's say, again, you and I are two individuals that know each other, and we're casual acquaintances. We don't know each other real well, but we're generally pretty nice to each other. Again, maybe you do something smart. I might say, no, Karen, you're a dork. Now, those are the same words. And there is some subtle tone, change in tone, and change in pacing, but that's pretty tricky to pick up on. I don't know if you picked up on a difference.
No, I did. And it's all about those nuances with the tone and the relationship you have with the person, you know, not taking the words literally, but trying to interpret what the tone and the intent was. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference, and it can be hard, particularly for, depending on how severe the person's issues with being able to pick up the nonverbals and how young they are. And so, and I forget who I got this from, but I think it might have been Jed Baker. I'm not positive. But this is what I tell people in the group is what you need to do is think about your relationship with the person. Is this a person that's generally nice to you? Then you should really make the assumption that even if you don't understand it, it's probably friendly teasing. And the same way, is the person usually mean to you? Then you need to make the assumption that even if you don't understand it, it's probably mean teasing. And then, you know, the complexities of how to deal with bullying, that's its own thing. And there's no, in my opinion, one right answer in terms of dealing with bullying. All I think I can say is that it doesn't matter what the person's doing. There's nothing that justifies somebody bullying another. So that's what I do, is I really tell people to focus in on the relationship. And one of the reasons I do that is because mean teasing, and this is something I experienced in grade school, is that after a while, the people that are bullying you, they realize that they're not getting as much traction anymore. And so then they change their tactic and they go, you know what, I'm sorry, you know, I was really mean, and you know, I think you're a really great guy, and, you know, we want you to be a part of our group. And so then you think, oh, my gosh, I finally made a breakthrough. This is great. I get to be friends. And then, you know, maybe they do a little bit of stuff with you. And then when your guard's really down and you're feeling really accepted and really relaxed, then they do something horribly mean. And it hurts really bad. And you're reminded again, no, they don't like me. They don't respect me. And you feel humiliated. And so that's why I think also that that's a good thing to remember, is that if somebody's usually mean to you, I'll say one final thing about that is, of course, somebody who's a bully, their standard phrase to say to you is, oh, I was just joking. That's just a joke. Can't you take a joke? And if you have trouble reading between the lines, then you take the person literally, even though you felt badly. But if that person's usually mean to you and it didn't feel good to you, then even though they say it's just a joke, you need to know that, no, well, that was mean teasing, that was bullying, and it's not okay.
Yeah, we could talk about just this for quite some period of time, because there's just so much with that, just trying to understand. And, you know, and it's not just with youth, but it's with adults as well, and just the subtle ways that people say things, and then they have you're questioning yourself on how did I interpret that wrong? For kids on the spectrum who may actually hear this teasing like from their peers and then copy it, that's a whole difficult thing too, because they think that, oh, well, that person over there said it and it was funny and everybody got a laugh, but when I say it, suddenly I'm in trouble.
Right.
Does the game help people understand differences in that way too, or?
You bring up a very good thing is it does take defining these things I'm trying to think how to answer this. So what I'm conveying right now is the big picture. I'm conveying, the meta reasons why I developed this game and why it gets used and why it's important. And unless I'm speaking with adults, and I do groups with adults, and most adults do, I can talk with them about the stuff that I'm talking to you about, and they get it. Some high schoolers can get it too, to some degree. But I find that if I talk about the reasons for using these skills to too much intensity with high schoolers and middle schoolers, I lose them. They become bored and they become distracted. And so what I do is we work on the game. We work on practicing the skills, similar to how you might work with somebody who's learning how to play the piano. You have them work on the simple music, simple songs, and they just keep practicing. And what I find is they have to practice for a while. They have to use these skills for a while. They have to see how others interact and how they react to it. And it's on the back end that I can start explaining, this is why we're doing it. This is why this makes sense. But if I try and explain it on the front end, they think I'm they don't get it, or they think that I'm crazy.
And it wouldn't feel as fun like a game. Then it's like, okay, this is work that I'm doing.
Yeah. And I don't want to pretend also that this game is as fun as playing a video game. Video games are strategically designed to have intermittent reinforcement and all kinds of graphics and sounds and stuff like that. That being said, too, is that what I'm asking, and I understand this, that I'm asking students and adults to work on the exact hardest thing they can be working on. It's like for me, I'm not that great at math, and if I were to be asked to learn calculus, I could learn it. I did learn it at one point, but it's not fun. And so So I'm asking them to do something really hard that really is seen as unenjoyable, not enjoyable. And so the game element helps, but, you know, it's not going to make it just like, okay, do you want to pick between playing the video game or playing chime in the conversation game? Video game's going to win every time.
But it's still like a better alternative than to just be practicing rote drills that one doesn't really understand the point of and doesn't make sense.
Right.
A game is sort of like, okay, this is, well, we can kind of work on this strategy. And for me, at least, I would be much more inclined to play a game and practice these skills than if someone were going to, you know, talk at me and have me try to practice things back to them back and forth. I wouldn't really see the point of it. But a game,
right,
there's kind of like a little bit of competition. You want to do well. And, you know,
right,
I could see it much more of an appeal in that way.
Yeah. And it's because there's cards, it's less self-conscious. A person feels less self-conscious,
mm-hmm,
because it's not about, I'm not putting myself out there. I'm just trying to use these cards right. So if I don't do well, it's just I didn't use the card right. It's not that I'm an idiot in terms of being able to be social. And so it takes some of that that shame out of trying to learn these skills. And then the piece that I haven't talked about yet is that it is a level system. So once they learn the basics about how to use the cards, then there are 22 levels that a person can move up to ever-increasing difficulty. So then it provides some challenge. It also enables people who are maybe at different levels of conversation skills, as long as it's not too wide a disparity, allows people at different levels to both be challenged by the game. And so in the more advanced levels, there are advanced cards and there are expert cards. And what those do is, if they use a make a statement card, they have to make a statement. If it's advanced, they have to make it about certain topics, like you have to bring in a favorite activity into the conversation in a way that seems natural and it doesn't seem like a huge topic change.
Mm-hmm.
Or bring up a time when you felt angry, bring it up into the conversation again in a way that feels natural. And there are...
And that's got to be...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So, and then there are ask with interest cards that are advanced, and those, it's a question, it starts out with the beginning of the question, but then the participant has to finish it. So, for example, one of the questions is, who is your favorite ... So you have to use that and then finish it. And again, it has to connect with things that people are talking about. Or another one is, how often ... Okay, and then again, you have to figure out how to ask that question and finish it and make it flow naturally into the conversation.
Mm-hmm. What has been the results from this? How would you say that, I mean, the game sounds fascinating, and I'm just going to tell you off the bat, we're going to get it for our family, because I'm going to practice it with all, there's three of the four of us are on the spectrum, so it will be very interesting to see how this all plays out with different age groups and skill levels. But
yeah.
What kind of reaction have you gotten from this? How long has it been out in the marketplace? And I mean, it just really sounds really great. I like the idea that there's different levels, different ways to advance. And I can see that if you're playing it and you're used to, you know, you get used to it after a while, it's just going to naturally transfer over to other types of conversations. What's been your feedback?
So it's I've not made it widely available in terms of marketed it intensively, but people who use it, you know, so let me step back for a moment. So picking up on the social things, if somebody is struggling socially and has been struggling for a long time, that it's a lifelong process of getting better at that. And if I may speak honestly, is that for me, I'm pretty good at conversation, but there's always things that I'm learning too. It's like any good game, and I do think that ultimately conversation is a game. It's a very important game. But any game that's useful is relatively easy to learn. It takes a lifetime to master, like chess or like Go or other things. And conversation is like that. What I'm providing is the foundation so that a person can see that it is learnable. You can learn it, and there are some set things that ground the conversation. And so I'll tell you two things. One is a very interesting thing that happens with the participants of the group, is that I have them complete a sheet at the beginning of the group asking them how well they feel they do these various skills, like the four I just mentioned, along with a couple others. And most of them put themselves quite high. Like if it's a scale from 1 to 10, most of them are putting themselves at 8 and 10. And then when I complete the 10 weeks of the group, when they fill it out again, their scores are actually lower in terms of what they rate themselves. And the way I interpret that is that they become more aware of what it takes to do these skills, and they have better knowledge about how to use these skills. And so they actually have a more realistic interpretation of their abilities. And I do want to say, it's not that my participants leave the group demoralized. That's a very rare experience. They understand the skills more, but because they understand the skills more, they have a more realistic knowledge. And so then I get these testimonials. One of the testimonials I get a lot of times from parents who have a high school or a middle school in my group, is they'll say, you know what? This is the first time that my child has spontaneously asked me, how was my day? And that's huge. That's huge if somebody is doing that. And then, you know, not everyone, but a number of the participants, while the group is going on, you know, they say, oh, you know, my son, they're starting to talk to people more at school. And my son or my daughter has just brought a friend home for the first time. And so that to me is certainly a win. And then if nothing else, and many of the participants repeat my groups a number of times to keep building on the skills, everyone has a foundation of language to use. And they can say, you know what? Jimmy, you need to make more statements. You need to ask some more questions. I think that will work. And it becomes a shorthand that they can just say quickly, and the other person knows. And actually, I use it with my dad. My dad has a very straight delivery of jokes, so, and I tend to do that too. And so sometimes when he's joking with me, I'm not quite sure. And so I'll say to my dad, so, you know, that's friendly teasing, right? And then he'll say, yeah, that was friendly teasing. And then sometimes I'll say it with a slightly different tone, and I'm conveying to him, look, you kind of crossed the line a little bit. And I say, so that's friendly teasing, right? And then we can laugh about it, and he knows that he's gone a little bit over the edge.
You know, I was just listening to, you know, all the different things you were saying. No, I totally get that. The foundation thing, and it was interesting when you made the point about the level of awareness that your group participants ended up having within their skill set level, because oftentimes, I mean, you don't know what you don't know until you're presented with this information, and to then be able to know that, oh, wow, there's this whole level of complexity with the conversation that is out there, and now these tools are available for me to be able to use, for them to go back and then rate themselves accordingly. I mean, to me, that would just be empowering. And the confidence that that brings, you know, just going, oh, you know, gosh, I know so much more now. It's such a better feeling to have a clue than to be clueless.
Exactly. It's better to have a feeling and have a clue than to be clueless. And I will say one other thing about that. So it is important to gain a clue. But I do want to emphasize to parents and to individuals on the spectrum that are listening, and that could be parents also, certainly, is that there is this thing that's called somebody's reputation, and you build your reputation based upon past experience. And if your reputation is that you've gotten this inadvertently this reputation of being a self-centered person or this person that is not fun to connect with, it can be hard to shake that reputation. I experienced that in grade school. I started figuring out in about fourth grade what I needed to do better. And one of the things I needed to do better is I needed to be a better follower. I was trying to be a leader from the beginning. And when you're not a part of the group, you can't lead the group. And so I needed to learn how to be a better follower and a better listener. And I'd learned those things. I got better at that. But I'd already created such a bad reputation amongst people in my grade school that I couldn't shake that. Now, I had a little oasis. I had Cub Scouts. I know you guys have that great troop you're running. And that was a place where I could feel some confidence. But it wasn't until I went to junior high, because we had junior highs back then, that I was able to meet a whole new group of people who didn't have a preconceived notion about me. And I could rebuild a foundation with these new skills I had and make good connections. So my point being is it is important to know the right skills to use, and then you may need to be in an environment where people don't have knowledge of your past reputation in order to build a new good experience.
That actually, I mean, that resonates with me a lot, too. I know in my experience just going from high school to college, it was such a different thing. I just felt like such an outcast in high school. But when you get to college, it's just everybody's kind of starting from scratch in some way. So, and it doesn't have to be all the way until then. Like you said, it happened, you know, when you were going into junior high. And so there's a lot of hope out there for people, and I wish that we had a whole lot of time to talk more. Right now we've got a few minutes left in the show, and I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to convey anything out there to parents that you want to share. We can go over time if you have extra time. I know that there were some things on our list, questions we didn't get to.
Sure.
And I wanted to give you the opportunity to be able to maybe hone in on some key things, some takeaways for families, or whatever you would like to say at this point in time.
Sure. Well, one thing I would like to say is if you are in the Vancouver, Portland area, I do run groups quarterly. And so every quarter there is a middle school and a high school and an adult group that I'm running. And I don't always run a group in Vancouver, but I have enough right now that I am running a Vancouver group for the middle schoolers. And so you can definitely get in contact with me. It's going to start up in April right after spring break. And for those who aren't in the area, they can purchase my game. It's a little bit hard to find. You got to go to my website, but if you go to brookpsychologist.com, and that's psychology or psychologist, with an S on the end, so plural, the brookpsychologist.com. You can find that game, and it's $55, and it comes with 170 cards and dice and the instructions. And, yes, there is hope, I know you've had this debate on your program, and I think it is a really important debate, is that there is definitely something to be said for trying to make to help the majority culture become more aware and more tolerant of the quirks of individuals on the spectrum. I think that's a very important topic that needs to continue to be talked about and continue to make room for. Having said that, I know that I don't make the social rules. If I did, I certainly would have changed them for when I was in grade school. But I don't make the social rules, but I do have a good understanding of what they are. And having that understanding, to the degree in which I can, I want to give people the opportunity to have a way to learn that foundation again so they can pick and choose when to use the skills that will help them build a good reputation with others, particularly what we call neurotypicals, or what I prefer better, I heard somebody mention it sometime, is needy types, because people who are on the spectrum tend to be emotionally needy in the sense that, and I would say that I am a needy type, is that I like a lot of affirmation. I like, and some of the way I get that affirmation is through those encouraging gestures and sounds. As long as you're nodding your head sometimes at me, and as long as you're going, or laughing sometimes when I say something funny, then I feel acknowledged, and I feel you've fed that need for acknowledgement, and my neediness gets dampened down, and I walk away with a good feeling from others. So hopefully with time, the needy types will have a greater appreciation of individuals on the spectrum, but until that time, or even if that time comes, I think it's useful to have some ways to know how to connect through conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I want people to feel comfortable in making those connections. You know, those of us on the spectrum, a lot of times, you know, we tend to gravitate towards people that are kind of like us, and I think that's probably the same with needy types too, or
yes.
At least you gravitate towards people who you share really cool common interests with, and I just, you know, I think that in some ways, to me, sometimes it seems like I'm learning a foreign language, but I want to learn it. And I think that when people see that you want to engage with them and learn, they're going to be more receptive to kind of helping you out along with that. And then reciprocally, they can learn more about you as well. And you know, I think that your conversation game is really fascinating and a really good opportunity, to teach people, you know, these, you know, to practice the conversation skills in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, it just feels more natural to do. And so if people are listening to our show today and you didn't catch the website, again, it's Brooke with an E at the end, Brooke, psychologists.com. And we will have a page up on our autismempowerment.org website within the next 48 hours that will have information about Dr. Brooke, about the social skills groups that he's running, and also a link to the game. So you can always be able to link in that way as well. And hopefully we will be able to have him come back on air in the future. Perhaps after our family gets a copy of the game, and we can kind of talk about it a little bit more on air, give some follow up onto that. I think that'd be kind of fun. And also, Dr. Brooke is going to be out there at the Easter Egg Hunt for Acceptance of All Abilities. So if you are in the Southwest Washington, Portland metro area, people come to this event all the way from Seattle and Salem. So come on down to McKenzie Stadium on April 19th. And say hi to Dr. Brooke, and he will have his game out there at the event, and you can ask him all sorts of questions. You can see what this looks like right there live.
That's
so,
true.
Dr. Brooke, thank you so much for taking the time to come on air. I appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule and for talking with me and being patient. And I look forward to being able to engage in conversation with you again in the future. Do you have any last words for our audience? Great. So then I guess we'll go ahead and close out our show today. Thank you again to everyone for listening. Thank you to Dr. Michael Brooke from Brooke Psychologists in Vancouver, Washington, and Portland, Oregon. You can connect with him at his website at brookepsychologists.com. And we will be talking with you again shortly. We will be having another Autism Empowerment Radio show later this week to talk about events we have coming up in March and April. So for Autism Empowerment, this has been Karen Krejcha. Thank you so much for listening to our show today. And thank you again to Dr. Michael Brook. Be sure to get chime in the conversation game. Thank you and have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you.